on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there. Welcome aboard. If you want to up your catch in the estuary of delicious whiting and brim and trevally and flathead, then try squirt worms, a very underutilized bait. Prolific, fish love it, but not easy to use. Roger Osborne will share the secrets with you up next from the South Coast. Roger Osborne from Burrell Lake. Welcome back to The Big Fish.
Yeah, g'day, Scott. How are you, mate?
Going really well. I saw you in your backyard on your YouTube channel, in the beautiful sandy clear water, using delicate little squirt worms that you've got with the yabby pump. And you get a lot of them when you're pumping yabbies, but by crikey, they're delicate. They're so hard to keep on the hook. But you had a blinder of a session that day.
Yeah, I haven't fished with them for a while. I used to fish with them when I was a kid, and I've seen them around. I mean, you can see in the water, you see where their cases are at low tide. When the tide goes, they're called case worms as well, because they're in like a sock, you know. I think the sock, it's probably about 8 millimetres across, like a round sandy sock. How they make it, I don't know. But you can see them often sticking out of the sand, and you know when you look for yabby holes, how they're probably about a centimetre or so across?
Yep.
The yabby hole?
Yep.
Well, the squirt worm holes are probably only, I reckon, about 3 millimetres.
So little sort of pinpricks almost. They're small, very small
yeah.
holes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's 3 millimetres? That's what, quarter of an inch is 6 millimetres. So it's less than that. I mean, you can see the holes when there's plenty of them. You see all these little tiny, well, they look black. But they're like a yabby hole, but just much, much, much smaller. And, you know, when there are kind of areas of them, there's obviously thousands of these little holes. And, I mean, they grow. I think they grow to about maybe, you know, 10 centimetres, which is about 4 inches long, or maybe a little bit longer sometimes. But they're really only in the top 10 centimetres of the sand. They're not deep because they're only that length. So, I mean, guys get them different ways, but when I use a yabby pump, you're kind of being a little bit gentle with it because it's not like pumping for yabbies. You're just putting the end of the pump maybe an inch or so or 3 centimetres into the sand, and you're really only sucking up that first 10 centimetres. So you don't have to do big pumps when you're getting them.
And this is what the whiting are eating. When you're fishing the flats using blood worms, or which are impossible to get now, I think they don't bring them down from Queensland anymore to protect the environment, or using, and you can't get them here in New South Wales because, you know, they live in the weeds and we don't want to dig up the weed beds. But if you're using beach worms or the cultivated tube worms, this is what you're imitating. And it's really interesting. One of the sand flats that's loaded with big whiting that I fish, My friend had an anchor that he made out of a sand anchor that he made out of an old saucepan full of lead, Roger, and he put a swivel into it to anchor the chain and the rope. And this thing was almost like a shovel. When you threw it out into the sand, it'd dig down with the edge. And every time I pulled it up at the spot we were fishing, the sand on top was just alive with squirt worms and squirt worm cases. And this is what these big whiting were eating. And they'll take a bit of bloodworm, they'll take a bit of tube worm, they'll take a little bit of beach worm.
Well, you know, I think, you know how whiting, their mouth is on the underside of their snout?
Yep.
They're kind of designed, their nose, for poking around in the sand. And also with the brim, you know, they can sort of forage around. Because these worms basically live on the surface, I can see how whiting digging around in the sand could very easily eat, so that it's totally like a natural food for them.
You see them sitting into the tidal run, you know, particularly that bottom that's got the wavy contour. If you have a look and it's got that little wave in it, that's exposing them, bringing them closer to the surface. And then, as you say, they're just mooching up into the tide and sucking them out of the sand, seeing that little hole. And they can be devilishly hard to catch when they're keyed in on those squirt worms. They just want nothing else. Their mouth's down, their eyes are down, and you've just got to get that little bit of worm in front of them and hope that it's one out of 100 that bites.
Yeah, well, I've actually watched them. I've seen them doing it. I watch them when I've been just on the, even when I've been catching potty mullet sometimes just on the yabby flats and the sand flats, I've seen the whiting in water that's maybe a foot deep, and they've got their head down, and sometimes their tail's coming, you can see it coming out of the water. And they're definitely foraging around and digging their nose around in the sand. And those squirt worms, even though they are delicate, they actually seem to stay on your hook when you cast, because my concern was last time, well, they're pretty delicate. Can I put in a little bit of a cast and will they stay on okay? But they did. But what I did is I made sure I looked at the tackle shop to buy, you know, there's certain worm hooks which are a bit thinner. The thickness of the hook is thinner.
Now, that's interesting, isn't it? You get those ones also with a little slice on the shank. They'd be a little bit harsh on those delicate worms, wouldn't they?
I did try a couple that had, but they're only a tiny little kind of...
Barb.
Yeah, a tiny little barb. Not much, just enough to stop a worm from slipping back down the hook. So I didn't have any issues with them coming off. I had a small ball sinker on that was maybe, I don't know what size it is, but it's about the size of a Malteser or a little bit smaller than that.
Yeah, number one or a number two. Running down to a swivel?
Yeah, running down to a swivel with a leader of about 50 centimetres to a worm hook. But I was only using 6-pound line. On my rod, I had the most amazing session. But, you know, I think I've learned something about the squirt worms as well, because I made that video and then I thought, I'm going to go for another fish with the squirt worms because they were so epic. And I went back to the area where I'd got squirt worms, and there wasn't any evidence of, you know, other fishermen getting worms. But where there was like a whole colony of them, they were very sparse. There wasn't many there, and I'm thinking to myself, why is that? And then I do know in that area the whiting go around, and I reckon that potentially they are probably even possibly a little bit seasonal, because like other creatures, they will grow and then they'll breed. And then this is the worms I'm talking about, and they'll lay their eggs. And when I went back to this spot, I went to a couple of different places where I'd seen heaps and there was hardly any. I'm thinking, how is that? Have the fish actually been through here? Munching away and working their way through the worms. I did get some, but they weren't as abundant as a couple of months before when I went there. So I thought, you know, I was just trying to work out what the reason for that was, because I could see it definitely wasn't people that were catching the worms, because you'd be able to see where people have been pumping with the yabby pumps.
Yeah, of course, and people don't really target them. We're speaking with Roger Osborne on the South Coast about the delicate squirt worm, which is a very underutilized bait and a very prolific bait. I've heard also a method of catching them where people take an old jam tin. I don't know if you get jam tins anymore, an old soup tin, and they'll put it over the, the hole and push down. They're very delicate. So you're getting them out of the case. You're getting them out of that case. So that what they do is they have a mucus that they secrete around their body, and then tiny grains of sand stick to that case that then sort of hardens up like a little leathery sock, as you're saying.
What happens is if you put them in your little bait bucket or your container, a small bucket or something, they actually come out of their case. If you want to use them for bait, you just got to gently... I mean, if you poke one end of the case, kind of scare them and they'll come back out. They'll come out the other end of the case. But a lot of the ones that I get when I'm pumping, a lot of them are not in the case. Like when you use the Yabby pump, you kind of suck them out of the cases.
Yeah.
So that's not so much of an issue. When you mentioned about the jam tin, excuse me, you use that method at low tide when there's no water and you can see the squirt worm cases and holes. And because you put a tin over the top of the hole and you push down, you're forcing air into the holes. And it must be that they, maybe they're a U-shaped hole, because if you push down, the air pressure causes the worms to pop up out of the holes. I've seen that happen. And, I mean, you could, nowadays, you could buy a can of tin corn, for example, or anything like that. Just take the lid off it and just use a tin.
Yeah, that's the way to go, yeah. And they're very delicate, though, aren't they, Roger? A lot of people give up on them because they come off the hook. You've just got to modify your casting technique, have you?
Just be a little bit gentle. I didn't find it was so much that they come off the hook, but sometimes when you pick them up, they break in half. You know, they'll wriggle around and they'll kind of just drop their tail or something. But it doesn't matter. If you don't have to put a whole worm on the hook, you can put several pieces of worm and it still achieves the same result. Now, as far as the distribution of them, Scott, as far as I know, I mean, I've seen them all up and down the east coast of Australia. So they must be, you know, in all your rivers and lakes and things. So they must be pretty widespread.
But they're in that sandy Clearwater Flats environment, aren't they, where the whiting hang out, the brim hang out, and you've got a nice mixed bag of whiting and brim. What else have you caught on them?
Mullet and trevally I caught on them in that particular session. I think I got mullet, trevally, whiting, brim. Don't think I got anything else.
Blackfish will take them.
I'm keen to do it again, though.
Blackfish will take them.
They
love the worms, yeah. It's amazing when you catch a trevally on that light gear. Isn't it, compared to the other fish? They really put up a fantastic fight.
Yeah, they sort of pump, don't they? They go boom, boom, and they go around in semicircles.
They do.
Go in arcs.
Yeah, they turn on their side and they use their profile to really make it hard to get them in. Are you a fan of eating trevally?
Yeah, I used to eat them a lot when I was younger. No problem. You know, I mean, you fillet them and skin them and... Yeah, beautiful. I mean, I've eaten a couple lately.
We never used
to complain.
No, I was put onto them as a really good sashimi fish by one of the listeners of The Big Fish. And I tell you what, they are spectacular with a bit of soy sauce and wasabi and pickled ginger and sliced thinly. They are a really nice sashimi fish, better than kingfish and many of the others that are more rated. I find them just beautiful, the silver trevally. And they're a terrific fish. It's interesting how big they can get offshore. I've caught them at Lord Howe Island, well above 5 or 6 kilos. Yet the ones we get on the coastal lakes and things, if you get a 50-centimetre one, you're doing very well, aren't you?
Yeah, no, you are. Actually, I caught three Tuesday, so 2 days ago, I think. I caught three.
In the lake?
No, off the beach with beach worms.
Oh, nice, nice.
But I find that I tend to catch trevally on beach worms if I'm fishing in the corner of a beach near the rocks. If I'm casting on the sand, but I'm only just out from the rocks, I seem to catch a lot of trevally in that sort of area.
They're not such a fan of the real turbulent water by the sound of it.
No, but they kind of, as you know, they hang around the rocks. I mean, you catch them off over reefs and different things. So it seems to be, if you want to target trevally off the beach, you're better off fishing more towards the end of a beach, you know, near a headland.
And they do tend to like the bait that's off the bottom as well, don't they? They like it in the middle, the top of the water column.
Yeah, I often use a Paternoster-style rig, you know, with a couple of baits above the sinker. So I think that's probably the case. I haven't really kind of taken that much notice of it.
Yeah, I tend to catch them if I've got a couple of rigs out in the run on the estuary flats with the smaller lead, you know, the one that's often coming up a bit further off the bottom, and then the other one that's a bit closer to the bottom will be more for the whiting. But they're great fish. I mean, it's great fishing and a beautiful environment. Obviously, the stingrays are something to watch out for as a bycatch. You seem to be able to handle stingrays very well. I just nip the line off near their mouth. I don't take any chances, having been stung once. Have you ever been whacked by one?
I haven't. I am very mindful of it. I find if you there's a bit of a depression in the head of a stingray where their eyes are on either side, and you can put your finger in there and your thumb on the side of their mouth, and you can actually get a really good grip, and their tail can't reach you. So I can kind of handle them, but I am wary of it. I certainly don't want to be stung by one.
Yeah, you're very good at it, the way you handle them. I'm not, having been hit once, I'm very, very averse to the pain. There's nothing like the pain. It's just awful, absolutely awful, and the allergic reaction can be quite nasty too. So, I just cut the line near the mouth and let them go in the water, and that'll, you know, rust out pretty soon. But, I think when you're catching the stingrays too, you're going to catch the big brim and the big whiting and often the big luderick as well, because they do follow them across the flats. I don't know if you've watched that in your Polaroids, but if there's a stingray that's sucking squirt worms and yabbies out of the sand, it gets a little bit of a caravan, a flotilla of followers behind it, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, I can see how that works. I may have said, I can't remember. Now, Scott, I'm about to go fishing, you know. I'm just about to go beach fishing.
Yeah, I'm going to let you go because you've got a mate with you, an old fishing buddy, I believe.
Yeah, no, he's come down from Sydney, and we're just going to go and enjoy and have a bit of a fish. I notice there's a little bit of an onshore breeze. I'm not quite exactly sure what the wind's doing right now, but I'm actually going to do soft plastics off the beach.
Oh, that'll be interesting. What are you looking for, a few flathead or
salmon? I've got some brim on soft plastics off the beach. In particular, you know, when you're looking for the little, you get a little short gutter close to the shore, which is an easy casting distance, and you cast onto the edge of the sandbar and just hop it over the edge of the sandbar into the little depression. I've caught some brim there. Well, I reckon I could catch some brim on plastics off the beach. So I'm going to go down there and just try a couple of different things. I had a look yesterday and sussed out a couple of spots. So, yeah, I feel pretty optimistic.
You've done the recce and found the gutters, and they look good. Well, let me know if you have another one of those squirt worm sessions, because that was really good, and it's an underutilized bait. It's very delicate. You've got to be pretty good to use it, but it's there in big numbers, and I reckon it's the key to catching some of those very finicky big estuary whiting. So tight lines, Roger Osborne. Thanks for joining us again from the South Coast, and get out there this morning and get stuck into them.
Yeah, thanks heaps, Scott. It's a pleasure, mate.
All the best.
See ya.
Roger Osborne there on The Big Fish.
Every day, I don't care what the people say, gonna sit by the water and there I'll stay. When I get old, gonna go fishing every day. People try to tell me I can do better than that. People try to tell me I can do better than that. Want a big house or a shiny new car? There's the shack by the water with a walk not far. People try to tell me that I can do better than that. Thank you.
envy of every old man in town. I'll be the envy of every old man in town. Sitting by the water with my feet in the sand, all day long with a rod in my hand. I'll be the envy of every old man in town. When I get old, gonna go fishing every day. When I get old, I'm gonna go fishing every day. I don't care what the people say, gonna sit by the water and there I'll stay. When I get old, gonna go fishing every day. It's what I wanna do, not what you think I should be doing.
Anybody packin' burly on a Saturday morning early often listens to a well-known fishing show where the secrets of the coast are offered up to Scott, the host, on The Big Fish on your local radio. Now, you'd have thought a bloke called Stinker wouldn't be much of a thinker and would struggle trying just to bait a hook. But he's a talented orator and a lifelong educator. As a writer too, his yarns are worth a look. His dad would make a quid selling homemade fishing rigs along the New South Wales-Queensland border. They grew up on the Tweed and would always catch a feed. Both knew the deeper meaning of salt water. One day, while on the rod, it seemed the fish were on the nod. So Stinker opted to go in and have a swim. He tied off to a victor that got dragged into the river. Now the seagrass there is always neat and trim. Being excellent at sport, it was PE that he taught. Still, he wanted to improve his situation. So he packed up and went west, rubbing shoulders with the best, and completed a degree in education. He moved on to Nelson Bay and became cultural attaché. He often came across an ancient midden. His boat, christened Stinkpot, he'd take around the rocks to explore the places where the fish were hidden. He passed on information in a local publication on fishing and avoiding getting queasy. He said the hardest part was to find them for a start, that the catching bit was relatively easy. Then, after 30 years of chalking and supplementary talking, he turned his hand to putting pen to paper about offshore island ghosts and fishing on the coast. Now he's authored several books about the caper. So remember to tune in every Saturday morning if you like to wet a line or cast a sinker. Of course, you need to be specific when fishing the Pacific, and you'll probably need a hook, a line, and stinker.
Hey.
And the man himself, Port Stephens' number one tourist attraction, Stinker, coming up next on The Big Fish.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Morning, Stinker.
G'day, Scott.
Ballon has got the big prawn. You've got the big pineapple up north. You've got the big potato at Robertson, which looks like a big something else. And now Port Stephens has got the big Stinker as their tourist attraction.
Oh, look, I've had school holidays. This place is rocking, Scott. Port Stephens, when the weather's good and the people are having a great time and they're all down the beach and they're in boats, they're fishing. I mean, this place offers, you know, why would you go anywhere else if you're going to have a holiday? This is the place to go.
They've had you down at the Tourist Information Centre as a tourist attraction. You're basically come and see Stinker, come and listen to Stinker. It's been going gangbusters, I believe.
Yeah, well, that's true. I had midweek, and Wednesday and Thursday. On Wednesday, I gave a presentation for kids, and I had a full house there. It was just really introduction to Port Stephens. Welcome to Port Stephens. This is what we do in Port Stephens. This is where we catch fish, and a little bit of history about the place. And the kids look at me like I'm Santa Claus. Oh, I always enjoyed working with kids, and really, you can learn so much from them. And when they get enthusiastic and they look you square in the eye and they ask you really good, sensible questions, it doesn't matter if they're sensible or not, all questions are good. And then you sort of work out what they want to know. And, I had a lot of fun. That was on Wednesday. Now, Thursday, I did another one for adults. And you know what? I played a lot of the information that I used for on the kids on the previous day, I also use for adults on the next day, because there's a lot in common. If you're going to go to a new town and learn things, pretty much what kids learn and what adults learn are pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, it's great, and it's lovely that the family can do something that gets them out into the beautiful sunshine, and the weather's been outstanding. And hopefully they catch a few fish, or otherwise they say, that Stinker doesn't know what he's talking about.
Oh, you got to come good occasionally. That's right. Can't continually talk about it, Scott. You got to actually come up with the goods every now and then. And that brings me to Sunday, last Sunday. Now, I remember speaking to you last week, and I said to you last Saturday, I said that when the sea settled down, that snapper would be out there like sardines in a tin. I remember saying that.
You did? I could play back the evidence. You did indeed. You were itching to get out. The big southerly swell, you reckon, would have stirred them up and they'd be on.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I said to you, look, I'm going to wait for Monday. I'll hold the horses until Monday. And then Monday, I'm going to get out there. Well, I couldn't last it any longer. I mean, I went out there at 2 o'clock on Sunday, last Sunday, 2 o'clock. Down I went with Stinkpot. I had all my gear ready. I was just, I was just raring to go, because I knew a little southerly kicked in. There was a little southerly. The sea was about a little bit over 2 metres and a good bit of rock and roll. And I thought, here we go. So out I went. Now, I went past the apple tree where I know I can catch snapper, but they're only small fish there. I mean, they're lovely fish. They're beautiful fish, but they're small ones. And that's sort of like a juvenile gatherings place at the apple tree. But then I ran around to a place that I'm now calling the gold mine, Scott. This place is the gold mine. And I've gone there and I've anchored in this gentle southerly. And I couldn't wait to get my baits in the water. I thought, this has got to be right. This has got to be right. So I got two rods. I put a bait. Now, the bait was odd because I had an old frozen slimy mackerel. Now, anyone will know that slimy mackerel, when it's frozen, goes very soft. But they were only half frozen, so they had a bit of rigidity to them. They weren't mush. So I put the hook gently through the cube
not fillet, a cube of slimy mackerel, and I threw it out gently. I bowled it like a bowling ball. You don't hoik it because that'll throw your bait off the hook. So you bowl it like a cricket ball, and then it lobs maybe 20 metres from the boat, and put the rod in the rod holder, and then do the same with the other rod, and then turn around and wait for the fish to come. Well, by the time I turned around, both rods were actually bent over, were tipped on the tip of on the water. I thought, whoa, God. I mean, I don't know how many sardines are in the tin, but I can tell you now, there's more snapper out there in the gold mine than there is in a tin.
It's the big fish, and John Stinker Clark is with us, and he did predict it, folks. It's happened too many times to not happen. As I said last time, when everything was lining up, the big southerly swell, everything was in alignment. It's funny, I was talking to a bloke who's an avid listener the other day, and he said, you know, I've looked on all the charts. I can't find Battleship Rock. I can't find the Apple Tree. I can't find Goldmine Reef. I can't find Cod Rock. I don't know where these places are.
They don't exist. You will never, ever find them on a map. It's interesting because I know all the old fishermen in this community, and a lot of them are retired. And when I talk to them, I know where they're talking about because they've got their own language, and they've got their own name for rocks and for bays and for reefs. They've got their own name, and you'll note you won't find any of those on a map. But I know exactly what they're talking about because I've learnt. But anyway, let me tell you more about this snapper trip. It's a funny thing, you know, Scott. I've been doing this for a lifetime, and I had an absolute ball on Sunday.
That's great, mate. And a nice feed, a nice good size fish.
Oh, beautiful fish. The first two I got, one was 5 kilo and the other one was 3 kilo. So I held the both rods in my hand as the line was squealing off because of the drag. And I thought, now, which one's the biggest one? Well, the one in my right hand, I thought, that's a real screamer. So I put the left hand back in the rod holder and let the snapper just dance around on there for a while. So I got the 5 kilo fish. Then I pulled the other one. One in, and I put that one in the boat too. So I had two in the esky within the first 10 minutes. But then what happened? It's unreal, you know. But anyway, what happened was that the wind changed from a southerly and it swung around to the east and to the north. And so then I'm aimed in exactly the opposite direction to where I want to be. So I thought, now, wow, this is no good. So what I did, I shortened my anchor rope to get closer to the strike zone. I shortened the anchor rope, and then I sat right up on the nose of the boat. So I'm facing the northeasterly breeze. But if I'm going to land my bait in that same spot that I caught those snapper, that's what I've got to do. So I changed from the back of the boat to the front of the boat. So now I'm sitting in the nose, which is tight. And I've got my bait there, and I've hooked it, and I got another four, and they were just beautiful fish. They were all around 3 and 4 kilos. So the smallest fish I got six fish. The best was 5, and the smallest was around 3 kilo. And then I still kept blowing, and the wind got stronger. So I'll have one more shift. So I tried to pull the anchor up, and what happened? Is the anchor was stuck on the bottom. Now, this is an ongoing problem. If you're in a small boat with a 9-horsepower motor and your anchor's stuck on the bottom, that's an issue. So I tied the anchor rope to the nose of the boat and then crawled. You've actually got to crawl, hands and knees, and down the back of the boat and kick the motor over, and then I tried to drive the anchor off the bottom. And I charged, and the little nose would pull down on the anchor rope, and then bang, off she went, and then all the rope floated to the surface. You know what happened?
It's broken off, yeah.
Broken.
But you have this real design philosophy for the prongers. It's not an anchor, it's a killick. Yeah. It's a killick, isn't it?
Yeah, I have. I only want really thin prongs. But see, it's also got to have, by law, have chain on it. And sometimes the chain will nestle down in amongst the rocks. And it's not your anchor that's stuck. It's actually the chain that's stuck.
And then that's the tiger country you fish in. There's lots of rock and kelp and shelves. It's really the habitat that the snapper are in. So, yeah, well, it's part of the reef now, isn't it? I mean, iron's a natural material. It'll have marine growth on it, and eventually it'll be incorporated into the reef.
Oh, it won't last long down there. But, yeah, so I came home and I filtered the fish and I cooked a couple for tea that night. Absolutely beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Fresh snapper. And then I battered them and we had them on our fried rice. You know, I like the fried rice. I had plum sauce and satay sauce and tartar sauce. And sweet and sour sauce, so you can do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But I put this lovely thick batter on it and then cooked it in about a quarter inch of hot oil. Had to be hot. And then it was so moist inside. And then just a little dab of one of those sauces, whichever you wished, or none if you don't care. And then what a meal. What a meal. And I packed all the others away. So I won't go fishing for another week. And I'll have some friends around and we'll eat what fish I caught. I come home, I was so excited and it puts a different spin on the day, you know.
Yeah, it does indeed. Excepting, of course, losing your Kellick. Have you got a spare one in the Wirra shed?
Yeah, well, I have, but it's not quite right. But I went out to the recycle centre and I know the people out at the recycle centre, and they know that if I go out there by myself, I'm probably looking for an anchor. And they said, oh, the anchors are over there, Stinker. Oh, thanks. How do you know that? Anyway, one was absolutely perfect. So I got a perfect old anchor that was just the right shape and a bit of chain all up. $5. Off you go, Stinker. Have a good day.
Away you go again. Of course, you can make those Kellicks too, just out of some deformed bar, D-bar and a pipe, and then push it up through the pipe and bend it down into the hook shape for smaller reef anchors. I don't know if you've ever tried to make your own, Stinker.
For $5, why would I bother?
Why would you bother? That's right. And it's just par for the course, I guess. You're going to lose a few. Is that how it goes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not many. Oh, if I lose one or two a year, that's, you know, probably one a year. I'd lose one a year.
Well, that system with the plumber's ring and then the rope from the nose to the rollick holder in a sort of a triangular pattern, and with that rubber ring absorbing the force of the waves and keeping you sitting in the right way, that's a really cool small boat anchoring system too. Quite easy to do. It was a bit of a game changer when I saw that. Unfortunately, the day I was out with you, or one day I was out with you, the rubber ring had finally perished and it had gone up to the nose. And when it's straight off the nose, it does tend to pull it down with two people in the 11-foot boat every time a greenie comes up.
Well, that whole design was pretty much because I have a bit of a dicky back. Anyway, that saves my back because it all the impact on the waves, it doesn't jerk. There's no jerk. It's a gentle pull. And so my back is very thankful for that rubber ring.
And that rubber ring is the gasket that goes around the bottom of the dunny, isn't it, in plumbing?
That's right. Yeah, you go and see plumbers. They've always got an old one laying around somewhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good system, that. It's a really good system because you're not up the front. Because if you're right up the front and there is a swell, as you're saying, you know, the nose can dip down and you can ship one over the front.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, anchoring is it's very important to me because I've got to be in exactly the right place. And I know where exactly the right place is. And a southerly wind will put me there. And it does, you know, but a gentle southerly and that swell, and I can toss it like a bit of a 9-iron or a 7-iron and pitch it up into the air and let the breeze take it. And then you wait. Well, this last Sunday I waited for about 10 seconds. But normally you might have to wait for a minute or even a bit longer. But then when the rod goes off, because you don't sit there, you don't hold the rod. I was asked there at one of my fishing clinics, how do you strike? When do you know when to strike? I said, I've got no idea when to strike. I said, because every fish I catch catches itself. I put the rod in the rod holder, and then when that tip of the rod hits the water, I know I've got him on there. But my hooks are very sharp hooks. They're top quality hooks. I have no lead at all, and the bait just floats around in tiger country. And then up comes a big snapper and whomper, and off they go at an incredible rate. And to see that reel squeal, so you've got to make sure that you're adjusted, your drag is adjusted. I'll tell you one thing that happened to me that has never happened before, and it was a big fish, you call them for 8 or 9 kilo snapper. But unbeknownst to me, I have one reel with braid on it, and it half hitched, unbeknownst to me, it half hitched around one of my runners, about 3 from the top. So the third runner from the top, without my knowledge, the line was half hitched around it. And when it went off, it went, and of course the drag couldn't kick in. And it just bent and bent and bent and bang. There was an almighty bang like a gunshot. And I didn't know what was going on. But the 20-pound braid broke at the runner. So that's how big the fish was.
Didn't bust your rod?
No.
Gee, you're lucky.
Yeah, yeah. You know, had it been up higher, that probably would have broken the tip off. But it just broke clean off at that third runner. But gee, you've got to be a big fish to do that.
Yeah. What are you fancying? You've got one running mono straight through, the other one with a 20-pound braid. Have you got any thoughts about which is best, or the advantages?
No, it makes no difference. Absolutely no difference at all. The only reason I'm using the mono because someone gave it to me and they said, have a go at this. So I've got it on there. But it makes no difference whatsoever. It might make difference in deep water fishing, but for the way I fish, no. Actually, I prefer the mono because I can tie the knots easier. If your lead breaks off your mono, it's a fiddly knot to tie your nylon back onto your
braid. Yeah,
braid.
It's
yeah,
a very
yeah.
tough knot. The Slim Beauty is one that I use, and it's a good knot.
I can do it, but because the boat's rocking and rolling and, you know, and then there's another rod in the water
Yeah, far easier to tie monofilament. We're speaking with Stinker, who had the best day ever last Sunday, and he did predict it. I won't replay last Saturday, but he said they're going to be packed in like sardines in a tin. Scott, the
That's
conditions
right.
are all right, and he just smashed them, the big snapper, out at a new spot called the Gold Mine.
That's the Gold Mine. Yes. And it's just so exciting because there's a sea eagle that sits and looks straight at me. He knows what's going on, this sea eagle, and it's been there for years and years. They sea eagles are a very, very smart bird. They find the best vantage point to look at, to search for what, their food, I suppose. And he sits up there, or it might be a she, I'm not sure, and looks straight at me, and I sometimes give it a bit of a wave. And I might catch a yellowtail, and I toss it in, and it'll swoop down. It waits for it to go about 20 metres from a boat, but if it stays on the surface, it'll swoop down and grab the fish. So, look, it's lovely to be out there amongst it all.
Great stuff, Stinker. In your element, and in your element there too at the Tourist Information Centre is Port Stephens' latest big thing, latest tourist attraction. I hope some of those people have fishing adventures like you, Stinker.
Yeah, look, those kids were so excited, and that gives me a lot of pleasure to see kids fired up.
Yeah, good stuff. Tight lines, mate.
Hooroo, Scott.
If you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now all through the week
lake is quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a good musician. So if you happen to be just passing by, stop in at the Saturday Night Fish Fry.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
Now my buddy and me was on the main stem, fooling around just me and him. We decided we could use a little something to eat, so we went to a house on Rampart Street. We knocked on the door and it opened with ease, and a lush little miss said, "Come in, please." And before we could even bat an eye, we were right in the middle of a big fish fry.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
Now the folks was having the time of their life, and Sam was jiving Jimmy's wife, and over in the corner was a beat up grand being played by a big fat piano man. Now some of the chicks wore expensive frocks, some of them had on Bobby socks, but everybody was nice and high at this particular Saturday Night Fish Fry.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
Now my buddy and me, we fell right in and we hollered, "Let the joy begin." Now we figured this was a good place to play, 'cause the party was already underway. But all of a sudden the lights went low, and everybody made straight for the front door. Man, I was so scared I didn't know where to go. I stood right there, then I fell on the floor.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking.
Now the women was screaming and jumping and yelling, the bottles was flying and the fish was smelling, and way up above all the noise they made, somebody hollered, "Better get out of here, this is a raid." I didn't know we were breaking the law, but somebody reached over and hit me on the jaw. They had us blocked off from the front to the back, and they were putting them in the wagon like potato sacks.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
I knew I could get away if I had a chance, but I was shaking like I had the St. Vitus dance. Now I tried to crawl under a bathtub when the policeman said, "Where you going now, bub?" Now they got us out of there like a house of fire, put us all in that black mirage. Now they might have missed a pitiful view, but they got both me and my buddy too.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
We headed for jail in a dazed condition. They booked each one of us on suspicion. Now my chick came down and went my bail, and finally got me out of that rotten jail. Now, if you ever want to get a fist in your eye, just mention a Saturday Night Fish Fry. I don't care how many fish in the sea, but don't ever mention a fish to me.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffing and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never see such scuffing and shuffling till the break of dawn.
Get away from that, boy.
Get out of it. Bloody seagulls.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.